Welcome to Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson, an outreach ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California. This program is designed to take you back to basic principles for living found in the Word of God.
So hey everybody, turn up your radio. Listen to your soul cry the question why song makes you wonderful. Something you never seen before.
Pastor Brian is currently teaching through the book of Genesis and will be continuing today with part one of The Testing of Joseph. So let's turn in our Bibles to Genesis chapter 39, verse 1, as Pastor Brian takes us back to basics.
So we pick up again now in the life of Joseph. And every time I read this story, I'm moved by it. Every single time, I'm enthralled with the whole drama that unfolds. And I always find myself at the end of the story, you know, getting choked up and just being so moved emotionally by the things that transpired. And what a great example and what a great man Joseph was. I remember when I was about 17 years old. And I was a 17-year-old heathen. And, of course, I spent, you know, as much time away from home as I possibly could. And I would, be out with my friends and, you know, we'd be partying seven nights a week and all of that. And occasionally my dad, who was, he was quite a heathen himself, but occasionally he would do something really weird, like he'd make me read a book of the Bible or, just some strange thing. And I remember one night, my friends and I, we were planning to go out. We were, you know, some party, some destination that we had planned for that evening. And we're all excited about it. And that afternoon, my dad says, oh, by the way, you're not going anywhere tonight. And that was extremely unusual for my dad. And so what are you talking about? You know, of course I'm going somewhere. You know, we're going out. We got a plan already. Nope, you're not going anywhere tonight. You're going to stay home with me. And, well, what are we going to do? And he says, well, there's a movie on, and I want to watch it with you. You can imagine. I tried every conceivable way to get out of that, and he just would not let me off the hook. And the movie was an old Hollywood rendition of The Life of Joseph. The movie was called Jacob and Joseph. And he forced me to sit there with him and to watch that movie that night. And I have to confess that when the evening was over, I thought this is one of the best evenings I've had in years. It was a great, great time. Now, it's funny with some of those Hollywood biblical epics. You know, when you don't know anything about the Bible, of course, you just, everything you see on the screen, you think that that's the way it happened. And then, you know, you get to know the word later and you go back and you realize it wasn't exactly like that. But as far as I could remember, the story was pretty accurate. And I found myself just being captivated even back then by the drama and by this great story. So I trust that you will have that experience as we go through these chapters here. So picking up in chapter 39. Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down there. The Lord was with Joseph, and he was a successful man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. So Joseph found favor in his sight and served him. Then he made him overseer of his house, and all that he had he put under his authority. Now, remember, Joseph was hated by his brothers. They plotted to kill him, but they figured in the end that probably wasn't the best idea. So instead, they sold him to the Ishmaelites. And as we read here, they took him to Egypt, and then he was purchased by this man, Potiphar. But notice verse 2. The Lord was with Joseph. Now, you would think that the things that happened to Joseph would be some sort of an indicator that the Lord wasn't with him, because he's been sold into slavery. He's been carried away from his home. He's been put in a place of tremendous difficulty and suffering. And generally, when we think of those kinds of situations, we don't think so much of the Lord being with a person in that kind of a thing. We think that, you know, where did the Lord go? What happened? Why am I in this predicament? God, did you forget about me? Or, Lord, have I done something wrong? Have I sinned and you've just cast me off? We have a tendency to think that if we're going through some difficulty, some challenges, some affliction, some persecution, sometimes we have a tendency to think that it's an indicator that God's hand is no longer upon us, his favor no longer rests with us. But the story of Joseph shows us that that's really not the case at all. Because the Lord was working through this entire situation. And as we go on in the story, we're going to find that in an amazing way, and as we talked previously about providence, but in an amazing way, God is orchestrating all of these circumstances to bring about his ultimate purpose, not only for Joseph, but also for the chosen family, for the family of Jacob. So he is purchased by this man, Potiphar, who was the captain of the guard, and the Lord was with him. And the Lord made him successful in the house of Potiphar. So you see, even though he was in an adverse situation, even though he was in a less than ideal situation, even though on the one hand he's in the midst of a severe trial, yet even in the midst of it, there's a blessing. And there's an indication, something that was noticeable, something that was visible. There was a sense, even from Potiphar's perspective, that the Lord was with this young man, Joseph. And so in verse 5 it says, so it was from the time that he had made him overseer of his house and all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in the house and in the field. Thus he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he did not know what he had except for the bread which he ate. Now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. So Potiphar had such confidence in Joseph, just such complete trust in him. He no longer even bothered to, you know, keep track of his belongings. He entrusted all of that to Joseph. So Joseph is made the steward over the house of Potiphar. And then this little side note, now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. And it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast longing eyes on Joseph, and she said, lie with me. But he refused and said to his master's wife, look, my master does not know what is with me in the house, and he has committed all that he has to my hand. There is no one greater in this house than I, nor has he kept back anything from me but you, because you are his wife. So Joseph, at this point, remember, Joseph was 17 years old when he was sold by his brothers into slavery. It will be from that time till the time that he's ultimately released from prison and brought before Pharaoh, it will be a total of 13 years. Joseph will be 30 years old when he finally stands before Pharaoh. So he's, you know, evidently spent some time in Potiphar's house. How much time, we don't know. If it was 5 years, then he was, 22 years old. If it was 10 years at this point, he was 27 years old. The point is this, he's a young man, he's a handsome young man, he's a well-built young man, and he is in a situation where he's completely removed from all that's familiar to him. He's completely removed from his family and all of those values that he would have been brought up with his family. He's in Egypt, where at the time the historical evidence indicates that the morality, it was a very immoral society at the time. And he's in a situation where it would have been understandable and quite easy for him to succumb to this kind of temptation. But the amazing thing is he doesn't. The amazing thing is Joseph stands firm. He stands alone and he stands firm. Listen to what he went on to say. He goes on and he says to Potiphar's wife these great words. He says, how then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? Joseph, even with all of the adversity that he had experienced, he did not in any way lose his confidence or his faith in the Lord. You know, it would be very easy for him to justify embracing that invitation. He could have said, well, you know, God obviously doesn't really care about me. That's why I'm a slave here in Egypt. He could have reasoned that, well, you know, my father's morality and the things that I, you know, was brought up with, I mean, those things were important amongst my father and the family there. But Egypt has an entirely different moral code. And I'm here now in Egypt. It doesn't look like I'm ever going to be freed from this. I might as well just take advantage of the opportunity. So many things that would have lent to Joseph compromising at this point. And mainly, I think he could have justified it by just saying, you know, God let me down. So why am I going to bother to continue to obey God? Why am I going to bother to think about what the Lord might want in a situation like that? He hasn't really done much for me. He's left me stranded down here. But Joseph is a young man so full of integrity that as this woman is coming on to him and as she's tempting him, he says, how could I do this to your husband, my master, but how could I do this great wickedness and sin against God? Sexual temptation is very much a part of our lives today, isn't it? And there was a time when our culture had more of a moral standard that was akin to the biblical standard. We have moved quite a ways beyond that at this point. And today, this kind of thing, of course, happens all the time. And not just this kind of thing, but things that are even more unbelievable in that regard. Back in the mid-70s, a well-known pastor debated one of the founding editors and then public affairs manager of Playboy magazine. The editor's name was Anson Mount, and this is how he articulated the Playboy philosophy. He said, "Man is capable of evil, but is basically good. Human pleasure is good by definition. Human welfare and happiness are the greatest good. Sex is natural. What is natural is good, and therefore it is good to have sex under almost all conditions." So this guy articulated this in the debate with his pastor back in the mid-70s. Now, that's when the country kind of broke loose from its previous moral moorings and began to drift. And boy, we've drifted a long, long ways since that time, haven't we? And sexual temptation today is probably more of an issue than it's ever been in the past because of, you know, the development of technology. Of course, you know the issues with the internet and all of that. We live in a highly charged, sexually oriented culture, and this kind of stuff is coming at us all the time. And the only way that we're going to have victory over sexual temptation is the same way Joseph had it. Joseph had victory over sexual temptation because his commitment to God was greater than his desire to fulfill his flesh. And you know, when it all comes down to it, that's really the thing that's going to make the difference in a person's life. We can't really expect that things are going to change for the better in our culture. It's probably going to continue to spiral downward, and the temptation is going to become greater and greater. And if our ability to resist is only based upon, you know, avoiding temptation as much as we possibly can, we could easily become victims. There's got to be something stronger that keeps us. So even in the face of temptation, we do not succumb to it. And that thing is the very thing that Joseph had. Joseph had a commitment to God. And he had, as a result of that commitment to God, he had a consciousness of God. You see, to Joseph, he had the absolute right perspective. To Joseph, God was not back in the land of Canaan with his family. God was with him in Egypt. Even though Egypt was an idolatrous nation and did not worship the true God, Joseph understood that God was with him there. Joseph is the kind of young guy that would have gone off to a university somewhere, and he would not have succumbed to the pressures there. He would not have backslidden. He would not have lost his faith. He would not have, you know, got sucked into the party scene and all of that kind of a thing. And here's the thing that we have to understand. It's entirely and completely possible to live victoriously over sexual sin. Sometimes today, some of the stuff that we hear people saying, it almost seems like it's inevitable that at some point in time, you're just going to, you know, have to give in to this. That's not the case. And we need to be careful that we're not deceived by that. A commitment to the Lord, like the commitment Joseph had, will safeguard us against the temptation that will certainly come our way. So we have to maintain that consciousness of God. You see, Joseph saw this temptation from Potiphar's wife as a great wickedness and a sin against God. Part of the problem today in our culture is we no longer see sin as a great wickedness. We no longer see it as something that is an affront to God. We no longer see it as something that is highly offensive to God. We see it as just, well, you know, it was a mistake, it was an accident, it was, I got into the flesh temporarily. And I think to some extent, and you know, believe me, I'm all for the grace of God, but I think to some extent we've misinterpreted the grace of God. And in our misinterpretation of the grace of God, we've diminished the offense of sin before God. And so sometimes we can be simultaneously living in sin and 10 minutes later in church worshiping God, and there's no conflict or contradiction even in our spirits. We kind of compartmentalize our lives, and we just don't think of it in the way that we ought to think of it. Joseph saw this as great wickedness and sin against God. And even though our culture is inundated with sexual immorality, and because of the familiarity with these things nowadays, we sort of become desensitized. You know, the way to keep from becoming desensitized is to stay in the Word. You'll look at something and say, that's wicked. That's sin against the Lord, so I'm not going to dabble with that. I'm not going to entertain that. I'm not going to move at all in that direction. Joseph is a great example for us in this area as a young man. His commitment was to God. For those that have struggled with sexual sin, you know, there are lots of ideas that people have about how to, you know, ultimately gain a victory, and there are different programs that people have developed and accountability groups, and I've talked to many, many people who have struggled in these areas, and they've told the stories about the accountability partner and about the filters on the internet and about the group therapies and all that they've gone to. But, you know, most guys that I've talked to have told me that they always found a way around those things. And what it finally came down to for each person that I've spoken to that has gained a victory is simply this. They gained the victory when they realized that this was a great sin against God. This was great wickedness, and they threw themselves basically upon the mercy of God and asked God to forgive them and to empower them to have victory. That's the way to get it. You see, because it's a matter of the heart. And when the heart is set upon the Lord, and when the heart has a genuine sense of the fear of God, we're not going to go in that direction. We're going to look at that temptation as it comes our way, and instead of being drawn to it, we're going to be repelled by it. We're going to say, that's great wickedness, and that is sin against the Lord. And I'm not going to entertain it. I'm not going to dabble with it. I'm not going to give it another moment's time in my mind or before my eyes. So Joseph set the example for us so long ago. So it was, as she spoke to Joseph day by day, that he did not heed her to lie with her or to be with her. So she was persistent, obviously. This wasn't just a one-time occurrence. She kept pressuring him. But it happened about this time when Joseph went into the house to do his work, and none of the men of the house was inside, that she caught him by the garment, saying, "Lie with me." But he left his garment in her hand and fled and ran outside. And so it was, when she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and fled outside, that she called to the men of her house and spoke to them, saying, "See, he has brought into us a Hebrew to mock us. He came in to me to lie with me, and I cried out with a loud voice. And it happened when he heard that I lifted my voice and cried out, that he left his garment with me and fled and went outside." So she kept his garment with her until his master came home. So, a wicked woman, to say the least. Notice what Joseph did. He fled. Paul, in writing to the Corinthians, said, "Flee sexual immorality." Paul, in writing to Timothy, said, "Flee youthful lust." And you know, it's perfectly acceptable and advisable If you find yourself in a situation where you're tempted and you're on the verge of falling into sin, it's perfectly acceptable and highly advisable to flee. Run. Get out of the situation as quick as you can. As stupid as you might feel, as weird as it might look, running out of a situation, it's worth it. Do it. Flee from it.
We'll return with more of our study through the book of Genesis in our next lesson as Pastor Brian continues with part two of The Testing of Joseph. But right now, I'd like to remind you that if you missed any part of this study, or perhaps you'd like to review it again at a more convenient time, you can do so by simply calling us toll-free at 1-800-733-6443 and request the message entitled The Testing of Joseph. Or if you prefer, simply refer to it by resource number BT0048. Once again, our toll-free number is 1-800-733-6443. And for those of you that prefer to write, you can address your correspondence to Back to Basics, P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. And when writing or calling, be sure to ask for a free catalog of available resources from Back to Basics, and please include the call letters of this station with your correspondence. You're also invited to visit our website at backtobasicsradio.com, where you can listen to archived messages by Pastor Brian or subscribe to our podcasts. Once again, that's backtobasicsradio.com.
Turn up your radio.
Back to Basics is sponsored by Calvary Chapel of Costa Mesa, California.